Everybody, I'm Josh. I'm an addict. I'm from the heart of Illinois area of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for having the convention. I know how much work it takes to put a convention on, so thank you everybody that's done this. It's been a great time. I'm here to introduce Jack C. I met Jack one Sunday morning, and I like to watch football on Sundays and that's about it. And so Sunday morning, at about, I don't know what time it was, I hear a knock at the back door, and it's Jack on my back porch. I've never met him before in my life. And we would take addicts, and we'd have a big house, and we'd have our friends of ours that were trying to get clean again, and we'd, you know, give them a couch to sleep on and stuff like that. We were not really into taking strangers in that we've never met. So Jack is at the back door, and he's like, you know, if you know Jack, he's kind of crazy-eyed and a little twitchy, and he's like, and he's even more then because he doesn't have a lot of clean time, and he's like, I hear you guys take in addicts, and I'm like, and so I reluctantly let him into the kitchen, and I guess he's attractive, so my wife was like, well, let's hear what he has to say, you know, and I'm like, okay, and so then, and he would not take no for an answer, man. Like, he was determined to change his life. He was determined, maybe, that he saw a place in us to... So we scooped him up, man. We scooped him up. He came to our Thanksgiving. He wore a tie. It's not a very formal Thanksgiving. And he did dishes the whole time. He was there. You know, and he was in treatment. He had to get a pass to come do it, you know. And he became part of our family, you know. And if you've been around here a long time, or even if you've been around here a little time, you know that I'm rooting for every single one. And sometimes we get our hearts broke, you know, and it's hard. And, you know, you'll see our people out somewhere, you know, and they look totally different. And it's like, man, where was the guy that loved recovery 2 months ago? Where is that guy right now? Because I don't see him right now, you know. And Jack is one of the ones that, like, he picked this thing up and ran with it, man. Like, he picked this thing up and ran with it. You know, he started like a lot of us, you know, a bag full of somebody else's clothes and, like, not much else, you know. And, I mean, It just warms my heart, man, to be a part of his family, to see him build a life that he's built, and to come to Lawton, Oklahoma, and dig into the Narcotics Anonymous community there, and it's just been great, man. And I love him to death. So proud of him, Jack C.
Well, hello, my name's Jack and I'm an addict. I'm super grateful to be here this afternoon. I know that like 3 is a hard time to sell. So at work at about 3 in the afternoon, I either have to have a cup of coffee or a little nap at my desk. So it's not the best time. So I'm so glad for those that came out to hear me and share my recovery journey with me today. And so I do want to say a couple of thanks, you know, definitely thanks for my sponsor for making the trip to introduce me. It really means the world to me. And I really do think that it speaks about, you know, how people that live the program of Narcotics Anonymous operate, right? Because it can sometimes be an inconvenience. And I actually heard some other people share about this too. And so Eric said, hey, we just listened to a bunch of tapes at this, like, committee meeting for Orkna, right? And they thought maybe you ought to speak. And my heart dropped, right? Because truthfully, in my brain, I was scared. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do that, right? Like, I don't want to interrupt my daily life, my comfort zone, to get out there and do something new, right? Or, you know, and so luckily, he's like, the date is, you know, I can't remember, 4/9 through 4/12 or something, right? And I'm like, well, that's my wife's birthday. And so I give him my good old usual, which is I try not to say no to Narcotics Anonymous, which is the truth. Whether I want to or not, I try not to say no, right? because what I'm talking about here is a way of life, right? And so that's why I'm so grateful to my sponsor for showing me that way. So I go home and I say, so it's up to my wife, which is one of my favorites. It's one of my favorites, like not even just in NA, but like everywhere. Like if she says no, it's like no. You know, that was easy. And then if she says no and I wanted to and other people are unhappy, I can blame it on her, which isn't that great, but it's an easy one for me to use, right? So I go home and I say, honey, they've asked me to speak, and I think I would like to, you know, because you know I try not to say no when Anna asks me to show up. But it's your birthday, and I'll do whatever it is that you say. And so, by the grace of my wife's yes, I am here today. And so I do want to thank her for doing that. She's shared her message this morning. I've heard a lot of great speakers already at this convention. One of the ones in the men's rap that ended, like, it's in my mind, it's like, why do I got to follow him? So any men that were there, I'm sorry if I let you down, because he kicked ass, right? anyhow, I'm super grateful. I'm also grateful for those that did the hard work to get behind this. And so I was just laughing to myself, too, about planning a Gurkna in Illinois. And I was like, God, do you remember that those days? I was the merchandise guy, like in charge of getting the people that were going to sell the t-shirts, but also getting all the coffee cups and the lanyards and the bags done. And I didn't do the greatest job, and the bags got there the night before. And people are like staying up all night, like stuffing the bags to try to make sure that we're ready for it, right? And sometimes these things can be a disaster. So everybody that has an orange one of these, take the opportunity to thank them for their service, because it's a lot to take it and make an event on. And then I hope nobody cares, but then somebody said, well, didn't you hear that Elena had to drive across the state because Eric got arrested? And he had everything for the convention in the back of his car. And I was like, that's an NA function, baby. And then I was looking at this banner and I was thinking, holy shit, 40 years. And I looked outside at all of the wonderful memorabilia that somebody has really taken the time to put together. Like record a history, which just a little shout out, what's happening after this meeting is a little bit of NA history, right? So maybe take the opportunity to go to that as well, if it's in your schedule to do so. But it's like 40 years, what a wonderful time, how awesome to see all the banners and all the memorabilias. And then I was looking at it longer and I was like, that's Mount Scott. And I don't know if you guys know what Mount Scott is, but Mount Scott is right outside of Lawton, Oklahoma, right? And it's the highest point in Oklahoma. In elevation, I was thinking highest point of freedom in Oklahoma is different way NA, Lawton, Oklahoma, baby. Right? So it's a great convention, right? But I'm just saying it's on the banner. And now it's there forever, right? So thank you, everybody, for putting this on and inviting me to be here today. Now, I've prayed in a lot of bathrooms for a lot of different reasons, but the one that I've had the most of in the last decade is praying in bathrooms of treatment centers and convention centers and a few groups that aren't my home group, and it's always to, like, share a positive message of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because sometimes my ego can get in the way a little bit, right? And I want to make sure that despite that I feel truthfully that I deserve my life and that I earned it, right? There's still, and I have come over the years to be comfortable with that and not think that that's necessarily ego. But I do also am comfortable with the fact that in the back of my head, my disease can still talk to me. And a lot of the times it says, you're not good enough, boy. Sometimes it says that in my father's voice, which is poignant. That's not to say that he is a bad man, but that says that's how I think about it. That actually doesn't have anything to do with him. And I'll share about that maybe with some other things in my life too. It's how I think about it. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual situation. It's how I respond. That's my thinking disease, right? And it says, they're going to find out and you're a fraud. And so that's why I'm so damn scared. My heart dropped when Eric asked me, right? And so I truly believe that I was born an addict, right? I was born with a thinking disease that talks to me negatively. And if I take it up and play with it and look at it, it starts getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, right? And so I think that I was always also looking for fulfillment outside of myself, but I didn't understand God. And truth is that I probably still don't understand God, but I have a much better understanding for me today than I ever have in my life, because that's been a long developing journey to freedom, right? And so like this idea that I was looking for fulfillment outside of myself long before I picked up drugs. But drugs were a pretty good solution as soon as I started using them. I don't want to spend too much time talking about all this today, but I do want to identify a little bit for anybody that needs it, right? And so when I was young, we were all experimenting and changing who we were, because we were going from basically being kids to young adulthood, going through puberty, right? And so this is when I started using and found this solution for things. But a lot of people were doing it at that time. A lot of people, right? Most of the people that were my age. But there is this imaginary, like, line in the sand. And, like, if an addict is in that scenario and they cross that line, there's no going back. But a lot of other people, normal people, did that in their youth and didn't become what I became. Basically, as young adults, we're all there drinking, and somebody has some cocaine, and we do the cocaine, and all of a sudden, we're up, and nobody's got any money left, and the birds are, like, chirping, right? And most people are like, oh, that was terrible, I'm going to bed. And I'm like, how the hell do we get more money? Aren't we going to do this again today? Like, what do you mean we're done? And so that was kind of the difference in my thought and behavior patterns than those around me. So another major theme of my early using was progressive, right? And so you hear about this in the literature too, but the disease of addiction is progressive in so many ways. So many ways, right? But one of the things that was an early expression of that progression for me was, if you wouldn't use the way I wanted to use, I'd ditch you and find somebody that was going to use harder, right? And so, like, if you no longer suited me because you weren't going to go to the next level, I was going to find the group that was. So I cycled through people. I cycled through them and used them up for what they were worth to me, and then I found the next group. And so that was reoccurring during my early years. Other functions of the progression of the disease are also in relationship to how I would use, right? So all those things that, like, were originally negative perceptions of what addiction is, and it talks about this in the basic text too, that we assume that an addict is just an IV user under the bridge, right? And so a lot of people, it's like, well, you know, I will snort it, but I won't shoot it, right? And so my disease progressed in how I would use it too, right? And so then another form of this progression for me was the consequences of my use. Holy shit, right? That would continue to progress over the years of my early addiction as well. At first, I just get a little DUI for driving under the influence, right? And then after that, I get like a little possession and paraphernalia. And then after that, I'd have like possession with intent. And by the end, I've got this horrible like conspiracy to distribute in multiple states. Right? And so all of a sudden, it's getting worse and worse and worse, the consequences of what's happening too. And so one of my little jokes about all that is that my clean date is June 24th, 2014. Thank you. And my joke is that I can't forget it because I got paperwork, right? So the U.S. Marshals pick me up, right? And I get indicted for this conspiracy charge, right? And so the whole idea of stopping using for me has been over and over through my early years. Would I stop, right? And how that happened is I get arrested, right? And at first it would just be a little problem, this progression of these arrests, right? And then after that they'd be like, well, maybe you're an addict. Can we put you in treatment? And so then I'd go to a treatment facility. And then the next time it would be like, maybe we'll put you in a longer treatment facility and more jail time, right? So the progression happens in so many ways, right? Our basic text describes it as an atomic explosion. That most addicts need the equivalent of an atomic explosion in their life for them to get clean. And so that indictment was my atomic explosion, okay? And let me tell you why. They have this, feds is different than the stateies, right? And they have these mandatory minimums and this weird sliding scale. Like if you're a violent offender and what all this other, there's these little points that make these sliding scales. And my mandatory minimum was like, I can't remember if it was 10 years or if it was 15 years. And I was lucky because I was nonviolent, right? And so all of a sudden I was like, they're going to take away the rest of my youth, right? And this is like, it. The other thing about when I got indicted was that I had been trying to stop for so long, but I just didn't really know how, right? I'd been tied up in the court system for years. And they made me go to meetings, and I had a sheet, and I had to get it signed, right? But where I was from was rural Illinois. And what we had was we had AA meetings. And I, listen, I'm forever grateful for AA. Because without AA, I mean, I would not have my recovery. Without AA, I would not have the 12 steps the way that I can apply them in Narcotics Anonymous with the step working book, right? Like, I am forever grateful for it. But when I was a young man and I went into a room with a bunch of old men that were complaining about the fact that we could no longer smoke, I was like, I'm not staying here, you know? Like, I am too cool for this. And so I could put together like 6 months, 9 months, right? But I could never figure out how to stay stopped, right? I could never really truly figure out how to stay stopped. And so by the end, when nobody wanted to use with me. Because as soon as we would get loaded, as soon as we'd finally score, I'd be like, there's a different way. And they'd be like, shut up. And I'd be like, I can't keep living like this. And they'd be like, you are ruining my high. And I'd be like crying. High. I've been working all day, 24 hours, 48 hours to get the next one, no matter what we had to do to get the next one, right? And we'd finally get it, and I would just not shut the hell up about how can we stop this. And so when we got indicted, because it's a conspiracy, so I probably lots of you guys know how conspiracy worked, but it all really started because they were using it for gangs and organized crime. But all of a sudden, when we started to have major meth problems in Illinois, which Illinois was a great place to manufacture meth for a long time, big problems. So the feds come in and they start using this conspiracy idea and catching everybody. So if you can catch one person that'll talk just on hearsay, you can get a huge group of people. And so I get caught up in this conspiracy to distribute heroin, right? Because they realized how effective it was with methamphetamine. Why don't we apply it to the new opiate epidemic, right? This is how I get caught up. So I get indicted with a bunch of people and a bunch of people that I ran with, right? And so we're all going through and getting our mug shots and stuff, and they put it on the TV and shit, and people can see it, and I'm sitting there with my thing just fucking smiling. And everybody is like, what are you doing? Nobody smiles in a mug shot. And I was like, I'm just so happy it's going to be different. Like, I don't even know what prison's going to be like. Like, real prison, right? I've plenty of time in jail. But I am so relieved that tomorrow I don't have to worry about getting the next one because I can't. It's finally been taken away from me, right? And now something's going to be different, not just like a little break where I'm like recharging before I get back out there, right? Instead, it's like I am now really in trouble, right? My life is going to change forever. And I was thrilled. Inside, even though I was scared, I knew it was going to be different. And so there I am smiling away. And so people had made fun of me for that for years. But ultimately, I couldn't stop on my own. Some people, I see them come into Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and they don't have a sheet to sign, right? And they don't have a case. But they've just had enough, and they can stop. And they can apply it and start working it and surrender right there. And that was never my story, right? Is that I always had to have a major intervention. So anyhow, this atomic explosion happens in my life, and all of a sudden, forced change occurs. So I'm in a holding facility for quite a number of months, and because I'm a repeat offender, they keep saying, like, there's no hope for you. You're going to prison, right? And then about like 3 or 4 months in, my lawyer comes in and says, hey, do you know anything about Patty Court? And I'm like, I got no idea what you're talking about, right? And so there's several things in my life that are like God things for me. Like things that, like, if it had just been slightly different, would have changed the entire trajectory of the next decade. And this is one of those God things. I got indicted in the only district in the entire United States of America that had a pilot drug court program. Like, who the hell gets that kind of luck, right? It's like mandatory minimum, like 10, 15 years, right? Here's the sliding, right? And all of a sudden they say, hey. The lawyer says, hey, you have a degree. Because somehow through all of this, mostly with the, brute force will of my father pushing me through, I had completed school and I had accomplished a few little things out there while I was using, right? And he said, do you think you could get some letters of reference? Because you are a potential candidate for this. And since you have an education, if you got enough reference letters, we believe that we may get the judge to okay it. Patty Courts, it stands for Pre-Alternative to Detention Initiative. And I wish that I could tell you today that this is alive and well out there and that it has moved into other districts, but I cannot tell you that. Sadly, through certain changes of the administration and the political arena, Patty Court is no longer out there. But it was modeled after successful drug court programs that they've been using in other parts of the U.S. at the state level. And they were recognizing that in Illinois, because of the methamphetamine problem, they were putting so many people in prison that may have only potentially bought a box of Sudafed. And so they were like, how could we potentially find a way to rehabilitate people instead of just incarcerating them? And so this miracle occurs that I have the opportunity to participate in this drug court program. So the reason that I'm standing here today is a combination of things. My success is a combination of a marriage of certain things early on in my recovery. Those things are the court system, treatment centers and facilities, and Narcotics Anonymous. Okay? But I'm not telling you, I'm not convoluting my message. I want you to know that the reason that I have continued recovery is the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. The reason that I found a way to not pick up again, because remember, I had time and time again stopped. Every time I ran out of money, I stopped. Every time I got arrested, I stopped. Every time a dope man got arrested, I stopped, right? But I could never figure out how to stay stopped, right? So I'm telling you, I am not convoluting my message. It is important to know that it was an important together thing that made it possible for me to get to the point where I could start to work the steps, and that's my story. But what keeps me here, what gives me continued recovery and freedom in my life, is the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. So let's make sure that that is clear when I share about some of these other things. So when I started in Patty Court, we had to do a couple of these things, right? And they said, we're going to let you out of treatment, right? So I'd been in holding for months and months. Then I went to a long-term treatment facility for months and months. They said, you got to find a place to live, or you got to find a vehicle to commute. And I'm like, they're letting me out, and I got the cowboy boots and the Wranglers on that I got indicted on in, and nothing else, right? A t-shirt that's like been in this bag for ever and smells terrible, right? That's like all I have. And I'm like, car? Yeah, right? So that's what I went to treatment with. while I'm in treatment, they have a druggy buggy. And so this is this tied together partnership that made my life possible, right? So I get an opportunity through the courts, they send me to treatment, and that treatment facility takes people to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, the druggy buggy. And so I start going to this place called Sanity. It really should have been called Insanity. It was the type of place, you know, the kind of meeting where you go and they chant during the readings? Yeah. Well, now it drives me crazy, right? But when I was that point, I needed that. I needed some identification. I needed some chaos, remember? I'm like heroin chic, really thin, really long hair, lots of tattoos, and kind of twitchy, right? And there were some bikers there, and they had leather jackets with colors on them, and they were riding Harleys, and they looked like some of the guys that I scored dope from. And I needed that. And a couple of those guys, there's one, sadly, he's dead now, named Grateful Ed, right? I think he died from COVID, during COVID. But Grateful Ed, and he had this horrible laugh. And if anybody's been around long enough, you've actually heard Grateful Ed laugh on recordings like this one from conventions, right? He's out there laughing, right? And he's very distinctive. It's horrible. But Grateful Ed's like, hey, you know, there's a guy, he's got like, it's kind of like a halfway house, right? And he takes addicts in, you know? And I'm like, yeah, well, what's, you know, you got his phone number? And he's like, I don't know if I have his phone number. But I got his address. I'm like, give me that address. It's like 1201 West Virginia, right? And so they give us these passes to go to this breakfast meeting on Sunday if you've been there in the treatment center long enough. And I got like, they're saying, you're going to be in Patty Court, right? And it's going to be this opportunity, but you have to figure out how to get there all the time, right? And so I got this address and I got this pass and I go to the breakfast meeting and I'm like, please, on the way back, can we stop by this address? And so it's Sunday after the AA breakfast meeting and the Bears are playing. I didn't know that. And so I go up and I walk up the driveway and there's a sign on the front door that says like something crazy like, don't let the dogs out. And so I go to the back and I knock on the door and young lady opens the door and she's got this Grateful Dead bandana like pulling long greasy hair back. And I'm like, is Josh here? I heard that you guys take in addicts. And she looks at me. She just yells, without like even turning around, Josh, there's some crazy guy at the door. And so, like I said, I didn't know the Bears were playing, which was a foul on my part. But anyhow, so Josh comes to the door, and I'm like, give him the spiel. Like, hey man, I was at this meeting, and this guy named Grateful Ed like gave me your address, and I heard that you take in junkies. And you know, I got that going on. He's like, no. It is true that we help people, but we only help people that we're already familiar with. And he starts to close the door, and I put my foot in that door. And I said, what about a cup of coffee? Yeah. I can smell coffee. What about a cup of coffee? And he opened the door and let me in. And that was the beginning of what has now been a very important to me 12-year relationship. So I won't tell you some of the other things he already told you. It was actually all true. I did look really good. I put the tie inside of my button so I wouldn't get it wet. But I was scared. And so they taught me some things in treatment, and one of the things was physical grounding. And so when I didn't know what to do, I just fucking did something that was tactile, right? And like doing dishes is very tactile. The water's hot, right? I have to concentrate on what I'm doing rather than what I'm thinking or feeling. And most of the time at that point, I was feeling, but I didn't know what I was feeling. Like I could fucking tell the difference. It was just overload, right? And truthfully, I found years later that my thing is fear. Everything I do is driven by fear unless I can apply the steps in my life, right? Unless I can live the program, I am dictated by fear. And we'll talk about that, I think, at the end as well. So anyhow, I had this amazing place to live. It was an awesome recovery atmosphere. So let me just like lay it out for you, Josh. Oh, goes to work early in the morning. And so I somehow magically ended up on the living floor, but there was like a bunch of people in the basement. And so Josh would like kick the door open to the basement in the morning and scream down it, what are you going to do for your recovery today? But this isn't like normal time. This is like 5:45 a.m. And like every day, right? So this is the environment that I got clean in. So I got sanity where they're like, yeah, alcohol, period, right? And I got, what the hell are you going to do for your recovery today? Okay? But luckily there was some structure and some rules, truthfully, right? It was a lot like a halfway house. So the requirements were a meeting a day, two on your day off. And dude, I had spent so long thinking I was so fucking smart that one of the best things that I ever did was shut the fuck up and do what I was told. And so I went to a meeting a day and two on my day off. and I didn't have a job. So I went to 2 meetings a day for a long time until I got a job, right? And all of a sudden, I'm like starting to get these key tags. And I am like, this is the dumbest stuff ever. Like, you're giving me a key tag. I don't even have a key. What am I going to put on this thing? So all of a sudden, though, the key tags became very symbolic to me, because eventually I did have a job and I had a key to the door because I actually needed to leave the house, right? And so I had something to put on that key tag. And as I got more key tags, I got more responsibility. And now I got so many goddamn black key tags with different sets. I got a set for work, I got a set for home, I got a set for home just to get at home, but then I have a set at home that stays at home for all the locks in home, right? And so what I'm saying is that it's a symbol of my growth, right? Of my development and recovery, is that this key tag has a major function in life, like to carry keys. But when I got here, I had no responsibility, no availability to do anything. And so I really grew up in NA. That's not to say that my parents failed me. They didn't. I actually had a very loving home, but I had a very old school father. That's why in the back of my mind sometimes it's, you're not good enough, kid, right? It's because what was demanded and expected was a high level. And actually that's not necessarily a bad thing, but how we deliver it. Now that's something I have to reflect on in my own life as a father. How do I deliver it? And I see reoccurring patterns, and my father and myself sometimes, right? So another quick story. I don't want to spend too much time here either, like just the idea of getting clean, right? Because I got a lot to share about staying clean, is that I didn't know anything about money. Right? I didn't know how to manage money. I never had it. Every time I got it, it went straight to the dope man. I literally never had it. Right? As soon as I got paid, I used it. It went in my arm. As soon as I got paid, right? As soon as I could steal it from you, it went in my arm. As soon as I could find it on the street in the gutter, it went to the bar, because they had these little pint-sized ones that were cheaper than bags of dope, right? These little women's beers. And so you could get enough change on the street to buy a beer at 11 as soon as they opened to take the shakes off. But the point is I didn't have any fiscal responsibility. I learned that shit from my sponsor. I learned that shit from you guys in Narcotics Anonymous, right? But it doesn't mean that I learn all my lessons perfect. Right at about 2 years clean, I mean, I was like, had gotten through a bunch of shit. Like, I'd lost the desire to use. I could finally walk by the bar that looked like the kind of bar I like to drink at, right? I had, like, grown a ton. But I had not grown in all ways, because I was yet to recognize that the disease was a disease of thinking, not of substance. Right? And so I was still looking for ways to fulfill myself outside of myself, and I still didn't know anything about God. I was raised atheist, and I was scared of the idea of God. And so I was out there like getting Legos as an adult, right, with all my money. Because I was trying to like fill something by buying things, right? It is still a dangerous expression of my addiction. Not the Legos. Well, yeah, because now I have boys, and so I buy Legos all the time, but I can live in denial about why I'm doing it. Right? I see this guitar, and I love guitars, right? And it's in California, and it's like this, 1940s Gibson, and it's like, I could actually afford it, but I couldn't, right? And so I was like, if I have next week's paycheck, and the one after. Like, I can do it, right? And it's like at the beginning of, well, maybe people that were techier than me, like PayPal was around, but it was the beginning of PayPal for me. I never had to use any of that kind of technology. And so I'm like trying to frantically set up this thing. I'm like trying to get money from here, from there, trying to like see like, hey, mom, it'd be great. You know, I need another guitar. I only have six. And this one's like the one. And if you just lent me, I'll pay you back, right? And this is all disease shit. This is sounding like what it sounds like when I go to try to con you into giving me enough for the next one. Yeah. Doesn't it? It sounds a hell of a lot like that. And I know nothing about how to live outside of my own self-centered will. And so here I am at this 2 years clean. I'm trying to force it, right? And I do everything and I get it. Even though everything is saying you can't. You're going to be short on next month's rent, right? You got to pay your mom back. And you've been like building to look like you had it all going on, right? And now she's like, why is he asking me for money? And you had to like figure out all this horrible stuff on the computer, which I hate to this day. And so I force it, my will. And that motherfucker shows up, cracked. Oh. Right? Oh. Shipped from California. Cracked right down the side, right? All the way around. I like pick it up and the whole front falls off, right? This vintage guitar that I've like put so much obsession, energy, manipulation, right? Enforcing my will on something that my self-centeredness wants. And it was a very important lesson for me, actually, I think, right? Luckily, I learned it softly, because the guy that had shipped it had insured it, right? So that was a miracle, right? That I got to learn that lesson softly, and I have learned a lot of lessons softly. And I'm going to share some things today, right? But a lot of my story, truthfully, is a lot like the things that I would say in early addiction, is just not yet. You know, I just haven't crossed that line yet. And I have some of that in recovery, like just not yet. Okay? And so I do want to share a little about the steps today, too, and how much they've changed my life, because this is when I really start barreling into the steps, because I start to recognize that this is a thinking disease that expresses itself in many areas of my life. It's not just about drugs. And so when I'm in this Patty Court program, I have to work this MRT book, and it's long and had 12 steps too, but they weren't the steps. They weren't the steps. But I'm sure it was helpful on some kind of a psychological level, and it's required to do it to get to the next level of Patty Court. So I did all that first, so I'm actually not starting to work the steps until about 18 months in my recovery. So I don't actually start working the steps right away, right? Because I'm like, I'm working the MRT book. So I have a sponsor, and that sponsor is not yet Josh, because Josh was like, well, truthfully, find a sponsor that you don't live with, which was probably good advice, right? And so I have a sponsor, and that sponsor and I start working the steps, okay? But like I said, I was atheist. And so step one is pretty easy. Like, I mean, my life was in shambles. Remember, we're talking about the guy smiling when he gets indicted, right? Like, I was, it's like not a good situation. Things were completely unmanageable and out of control. And like, I knew about addiction. I've been to treatment center at least 3 times, and how many outpatients? Like, I knew that I was an addict, okay? So step one was pretty good, but step two and three were kind of hard for me. But we lived together and went to things together at our recovery home, right? And so they, like, take me to this huge convention in downtown Chicago. And everybody had been talking about, like, oh yeah, the power is in the group, God's in the group. And we had a great group, don't get me wrong. But it was like, you know, a little group. You know, here we got this many members. I love to go to the noon meeting. And this is how many people are there, right? And I'm used to these people, and there's power there. But some people are saying, like, it could be the doorknob. I don't know what the fuck that means, but people are saying it, right? But I don't know anything about God, and I can't feel it yet. But I went to that clean down countdown after the main speaker at that huge convention in Chicago, Illinois, and I felt God. I felt a power greater than myself. And I started to understand what they meant, that the power was in the rooms. That if you didn't have a God of your understanding yet, it was already there. The power was in the rooms. And so that got me through steps 2 and 3, that experience, right? And so then I'm in this Paddy Court program. I've been working. Things are going really well. I got about 2 years clean. I've wrote my 4th step, but I am sure as hell not going to share a 5th step, right? And I drop dirty. And I get called in, and they're like, "You drop dirty for opiates." And I am like, "The hell I did?" And they are like, "You absolutely did." And I'm like, "I don't know what to tell you. I haven't used." Right? And so they're like, "Think of anything, but if you need help, we're going to help you." Because actually they were really this relationship of treatment center, court, and recovery in Peoria, Illinois. It did seem to want to help me, right? And they were like, "We're not against you, but you have to be honest with us." And so I'm like bawling, right? By the end of this 30-minute meeting, and I'm like, "I did not use. Check me, you know, like I did not use, right?" And they're like, "Anything. Think of anything." And I'm like, "Well, I went to the coffee shop, like tell your day, right?" And it was a fucking muffin, right? And I thought that shit was fake. So it wasn't, it wasn't even in my mind. It wasn't that I thought it was fake. I thought it was fake after, right? But it wasn't even in my mind that that was a possibility. I was just going to have my coffee and my breakfast, right? And that day, it was lemon poppy seed. And it was on the receipt. And so all of a sudden, they said, "Well, you've done so well over this last 2 years, and since it says it on this receipt, we'll send it to the big boy lab and have it deep dive tested." And because I had been acting right, because I had been delved into recovery community, because I had other people in Narcotics Anonymous, because I had a place to live with people that were living the Narcotics Anonymous way, I had made it 2 years without any issues, and they believed me, looked into it, and found out that it was true, that the levels were the exact kind of levels that would be if somebody consumed a small amount of poppy seeds. Which I thought was like on Mythbusters, right? Like I... So anyhow, but the point is, after that meeting, while I'm waiting to go, right? Like that, well, they're sending it off to the lab. I'm like sitting in the car, because I got some shit now, right? Now I got a car key on a key tag, right? I'm sitting in that car and I'm like, "Run. Run," right? Because remember, fear is how my disease expresses itself in my life. And I was like, "Run, run, run." But I had just enough under my belt, just enough recovery to say, "Face it forward." I had recovery on the other side talking to me. And it said, "Face it forward." In the back of the basic text, the 6th edition, one of the stories says that he wakes up and he introduces his feet to the floor in the morning, and he's facing it forward. That addict is going to face what that day has. He's going to acknowledge that he's an addict and that just for today he's not going to use, right? And so that's what I did, is I didn't run. I listened to the other option, and I desperately wanted to work a 5th step. Because I was in desperation for something to change. I didn't have anything to do, right? I didn't have anything that I could rely on except for the program. And so that's how I got through my 5th step. I do want to share, though, that I shared my 5th step with Josh. not my sponsor, because my sponsor relapsed. All at the exact same time. And I don't know, drugs are not specific, because I would use anything. I'd use a woman, I'd use anything to make me feel different, right? But heroin's what brought me to my knees. And heroin was what is happening in our area, right? And somebody was sharing earlier in the convention and they said, BF, I got clean, BF, and thank God, and he said that stood for I got clean before fentanyl. And thank God I got clean before fentanyl, right? Because it is killing people right and left. And so my sponsor, with about 4 years clean, picked up. And when I had picked this guy, I had picked him because he looked like he had it all together. He had a girlfriend. He had a truck. He had a house. And that's what I was looking at. They said, get somebody that you want what they have. And I'm like, I want a girlfriend. I want a truck. I want a house, right? But now, with years of recovery under my belt, I know I'm looking for what they have on the inside, not what they have on the outside. Okay? And for some reason, this man picked up, used, and as soon as he relapsed, he OD'd. Right? Because what happens to addicts with long periods of abstinence is that they lose their tolerance. But our disease tells us that we're going to pick up right where we left off, because that's what our disease says. And it kills heroin addicts. And that man has never been the same. He has never put together more than 90 days of recovery again in his life. And it is a sobering story. And for those that know, will cry about the man that we knew. Right? So amazingly, I had Josh, and I said, I gotta share this fifth step. Oh my God, you're kidding me. This is so terrible. 5 minutes? Oh my God. So I gotta share this fifth step, right? And so I get that fifth step, and I shared it with the right person. Because what happened is all that shit that I was like, I'm never gonna share a fifth step, right? Afterwards, he was like taking notes, and I thought that was kind of suspicious. Turns out he was making my 6 and 7 and my 8 and 9 lists, which was normal practice and super helpful. But more importantly than the list that he made me to move forward in the steps was he shared his own experiences with the things that I thought other men didn't have. And that meant the world to me. That was another major moment of like complete freedom, right? Things that I was ashamed of that I thought other people weren't going to relate to. I shared a fifth step with somebody that could relate. And it made me realize that there is nothing that we can't share with each other. And that those are the things that keep us sick, right? And that fifth step was a major growth. The steps continued to show up in my life in early recovery, right? And so in those ways that I use them in early recovery is that I wanted other things in my life. And I had met my wife, right? But I was not ready to be a partner. And so 6 and 7 made me ready to no longer be... I love that kid. My kids are doing it all the time. 6, 7. Right? It made me ready to be a equal partner in something. Right? Because my character defects, they were in the way of me being able to be there for another human being. For my my eighth and ninth step, both of my parents have had cancer. And I'm happy to say that they're both still with me, right? But for my eighth and nine, I got to show up for my father during his cancer. And he's crazy, right? So he wanted to build a new building. But truthfully, that building was symbolic for the continuation of his life, right? And so I went every weekend for months and worked on my days off to build this building addition for my father so that he could know that I was going to be there for him. So what's so poignant about this is when my mother had cancer, I was in active addiction. And I never went. I only went one day a month. Can anybody guess what day that was? The day that her prescriptions got filled. That is the only day a month that I went and saw my mother during her entire treatment. And so the steps have made it possible for me to show, not just in the expression to my father, but for my mother to see the program's miracle work as a living amends. Right? So I want to share that one of the hardest things that I've done in recovery is I moved. I moved with clean time. And I don't know who else has experienced this, but there's nothing lonelier than being an addict with some clean time in a new place. It's even lonelier than being a newcomer. Because in a newcomer, you're just stuck there all the time. If you're doing the 90 and 90, right? But as an addict with 7 years clean, right? You are have other responsibilities. And so when I moved, the steps showed up for me again, right? And I had a choice. Like, how was I going to deal with this? And so I talked to my sponsor, right? And he's like, well, either you're going to get plugged in or you're going to fade away. And we all know what happens to addicts that stop going to meetings. And so what I did is I committed to a day. I committed to a day. And at first, that was what I did. And as long as I could make that day, I was going to be okay. But I didn't get any relief. I still felt like the outsider. So I committed to the day and group conscience. Now, I didn't even have anything to do. I just went to group conscience because I knew that the people that were there were people that were stable in the group and that were giving back to Narcotics Anonymous. And if they knew my name, I would start to feel part of. And eventually, I got a service position based off of my previous experience in Illinois and other groups in service. Right? And so I'm happy to say that Different Way NA Lawton, Oklahoma is my home group, right? And I feel a part of. And I want you to know that when I got there, I did not feel a part of. But that was not the fault of the members of Different Way NA. That was my shit. That was how I talked to myself. That was the disease of addiction. Right? Okay. So Eric showed me the 5 minutes thing way longer than 5 minutes ago. I do want you to know that I've been thinking about how I want to close. Okay? So what is next? What's next? Right? Fear. Fear is what is next. Okay? But I don't have to face that alone or unprepared. I have sponsorship and a sponsorship tree. I have the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and I have a home group. Because my parents are not dead. They survived that cancer. My dad is 86 years old. Okay? So what's next is death. Fear. right? At January 1st, my job got shook up. The state of Oklahoma governor made an executive order to eliminate tenure in Oklahoma outside of OU and OSU. Okay? And so what's next is fear. Fear about the stability of my career. Fear about what am I going to do if I have to relocate my family again to a different state, right? But I don't want to live in fear. And amazingly, I have example after example after example of members of Narcotics Anonymous making it through things clean. I got to be with my wife as she made it through the beginnings of the processing of the grief of the loss of her mother, and I got to watch her do it with great strength and integrity. That teaches me that I can do that too. She didn't use. I don't have to use. Right? I have seen people change careers and lose jobs and not use. I don't have to face that fear without facts that I can apply the program to my life, right? And make it through those things clean to the other side and experience growth and have a continued journey to freedom. Right? Not some ending point where I've recovered, but a continued growth with no limit to what I may be able to achieve in freedom in my life if I am willing to apply the steps. Thank you so much. My name's Jack, and I'm an addict.